This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Welcome to the My Old Man Said podcast. I'm David Michael, the editor of myoldmansaid.com, and your host for a show that takes in Villa's first game back after the international break. Joining me to discuss that and much, much more, Mr. Phil Shaw and Mr. Chris Budd. Welcome back. How are you, gentlemen?
Hello, hello. Oh,
hello.
Hello, 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 hello.
Hello, 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 hello. I'm very well. Very well.
How was your international break?
Blissfully quiet and football-free. Great. I barely paid any attention to England.
Are you Scottish, Chris Budd? This is what I want to find out. Because he keeps mentioning this as if it's a badge of honour. Are you Welsh, Scottish, Irish?
No, what is I'm definitely it? English. I just like the... I enjoy the not having to bother watching England.
Strange.
I just watched the US Open tennis instead. Hurrah.
Phil Shaw, do you have any interest in our tennis exploits?
Yeah, of course. It was a great watch.
Box office, wasn't it?
Yeah. Enjoyed every minute of it.
So, I mean, it's unprecedented, isn't it? A qualifier to blitz all the way through without losing a set. When you saw the previous results, you just thought, unless Fernandez can stop the momentum, she's going to have a tough night, and her only chance is really to take Raducanu into deep waters, which I think the opening few games set the tone of what was going to happen, because it looked like Raducanu was just going to breeze through, but she fought back, and that made it a decent final, I thought.
It was good. She's a fighter, isn't she, Fernandez, to be fair?
Her sister's her little sister's a fighter. Did you?
Yes, she's a brawler.
She'll be. I bet she shanked about 25 people in the crowd. So.
She was bang up for it, wasn't she? at Flushing Meadows, but one person limbs.
Clenched fists. She was fantastic. Really, little gangster there. Brilliant. Yeah.
But you know, that was the thing when you can have your family there. Was, you know, Raducanu's unfortunately couldn't fly over.
Yeah.
She just kept her cool and calm rather than having a sister like blow her head. But
that's the kind of passion you want in those moments. But yeah, that's a good thing about any, you know, sporting event. You've got these little extra things, and she certainly delivered. And also Larry David was in the crowd as well.
Bet the guy in front ruined it for him. It's the kind of thing would happen to him.
Yeah.
You know, if it was like a Curb Your Enthusiasm episode, I bet he'd get into some sort of drama with the guy in front or something like that.
I disappeared off to Holland because you're allowed to go there if you've got family to visit. So I took advantage of that loophole to see some family I hadn't seen for a while. So that was a good trip. Glorious weather as well. The only thing that dampened it was the start of the NFL season because...
Yes.
The New York Jets are up again to humiliate their supporters once more. And they found another way of doing it, actually. That last season, absolutely terrible. Anybody who follows NFL will know that they hadn't won a game. I think there were like two games left, and they were in the prime pole position to get the top draft pick. But only when winning meant losing. This is one Jets fan. I read this. It was bang on. Only when winning meant losing did they win, and they won the last two games and lost the first draft pick. I mean, only the Jets could do that. So the discarded Sam Darnold, who was the quarterback for the disastrous season last season, went to the Carolina Panthers. First game this season, Caroline Panthers. Sam Darnold starts and manages to lead them to a comfortable win against the Jets. I mean, I don't... But there's not much hope for this season already. I'm already looking forward to 2000 and, well, I was going to say 2022, but let's make it 2023, just in case.
We are looking ahead.
Yeah. Right, on the show, as we start off with the Villa news, before getting into the 3 points, a mixture of serious and the bizarre, before getting into what went down at Stamford Bridge, you can tell who knows their football or not, judging by the social media reaction on this particular game. That's all I'm going to say about that. So, still, the underrated or overrated is still in hiatus. We will conjure up some kind of end game for episodes, but we'll just stick to the actual game this time because it has been a while since the main show has surfaced because Villa have had a 2 week break. But so let's start off with some news. Do you want to talk about M&S may have to close some French stores due to supply chain delays caused by Brexit, or the Villa news?
It's wholeheartedly the Villa news this week, I think, David.
It's a long way back, the old transfer window, but we saw the loan of Conor Hourihan to Sheffield United, which is his existing, what's left of his existing contract with Villa, pretty much done and dusted. So adios to him. Vital in our championship years, my summation of him would be.
A good servant, a good pro. Wish him all the best, but just not quite. He's just not the future, is he?
No, he did help a bit on project restart, though. Those few assists in there, so
He's got
plenty of credit in the bank.
While Joe went missing, he stepped up, didn't he? Him and Trez.
Yeah, and I would still happily have him in this squad at the moment. So, to be honest, Freddie Gilbert also went back to Strasbourg. It was one of those, I think it was a flip of a coin job there, because you thought, right, a Villa going to say, right, let's go full strength squad this time. Because I think there was room to call him in, is it 25 that they've got to pick?
Yeah, I'd have kept him.
So that's obviously a player that wants to play regularly, but also, I don't know if the future's really there. So potentially his last, he actually scored, didn't he, in his last game for Villa. So will that be his last game?
Gilbert will be playing against Jerome Boateng, because I can just see there. Boateng just came on as a sub for Lyon, despite being found guilty of beating his girlfriend and spitting blood in her face.
What a lovely guy.
Yeah.
Maybe Gilbert can avenge her. Right, the main news, I would say, is the Anderlecht assistant manager, Aaron Danks, joining Villa as the first team coach, essentially taking over from Terry and Richard O'Kelly. He was previously serving under Vincent Kompany, who is the Anderlecht manager.
Yeah, and he came through the England sort of age group systems, which is probably why he's possibly brought him in as well.
Yeah.
To deal with some of the younger players and help transition them into first team football. And he seems to be one of these modern experts on analytics, which seems to be the way Villa are definitely going that way. Everyone else is as well.
Yeah, I mean, Brentford were kind of leading that that side. So Smith's always had his toes dipped in there. His key attribute is he's seen as an attacking coach, so we'll see. Didn't do much against Chelsea, did he?
Clean sheet, if I remember rightly, wasn't it?
Yes.
And nothing from a set piece. Thanks for that, specialists.
Yeah, well, we'll talk about that later on, shall we? Meanwhile, Morgan Sanson looks like he's on the fringes, so we'll see if he is man or myth. Soon enough, I would imagine. He played in the EFL Trophy game against Wickham and was on the bench against Chelsea. We've already covered the Buendia Martinez fiasco that happened on their international duty. Just listen to something for the weekend for that. Meanwhile, the Villa women start their campaign. They were top. They did play early against West Ham, where they got a last-minute draw, having won their first game against Leicester. So a decent start for them. Major reshuffles there in coach and personnel. So we'll keep tabs on how their season pans out over the next few weeks and months to come. Right, now it's time for Media Muppets. So, Mr. Shaw, what's in the medium whippet trough this week?
Well, I've a confession to make. This one really got me. It hooked me. I couldn't click it fast enough. It was Richard Cusack in the Birmingham Mail, because he goes, after the game against Chelsea, Leon Bailey and Rudiger traded words online. So I do like a bit. Yeah,
that was the headline, wasn't it?
Leon
Bailey and Rudiger trade words online.
It was, so I couldn't click it fast enough. And then I get down there and I'm looking, what words? What did he say? Another thing they said was, Chelsea star responds to Aston Villa player with blunt three-word message. So I'm still looking for this and, you know, getting through the ads, trying to find these three words. I think maybe they'll have to be like blocked out.
Getting through the ads, that must have taken you a while, actually.
Yeah. And I finally get to it. And the three words said by Rudiger, you ready? It was, nice one, brother. That was it. Nice one, brother, with a smiley emoji.
Cutting.
Wow.
Blunt.
I think they've got to learn a new definition of what blunt means. For example, a word that rhymes with blunt that begins with C, there's an example of a word that could potentially be called blunt.
That's what I was expecting. That was the juicy stuff. I couldn't wait to get to that.
I'm surprised there was only one article made out of it. You'll never believe what Leon Bailey said to... There's about three articles to get out of this, isn't there?
I mean, as I said, I've been away. I disengaged with whatever hubbub was going on. But I did see some kerfuffle about Grealish and some interview. But I just, I didn't even look at it. But I knew that it would just be token answers to questions that are, what else is he meant to say kind of thing. That the media would pick up on and then try to stoke some engagement by, and hey ho, you know. I saw the tweet from Ashley Priest from the Birmingham Mail saying, I was asked to write this, and that's basically translates to I was told to write this. And it's a, I've eventually read it when I got back. And it's one of those which where the editor tells somebody to do a hatchet job on people. I mean, I've seen in my profession before one of my friends, colleagues saying, oh, you know, the Independent told me to do a hatchet job on, in that case, I think it was Woody Allen. And, you know, he turned it down. And then a couple of days later, you see another journalist with a less of a moral fibre, less of a backbone, trot it out. And, read this one and the major quotes were quote marks actually written by the writer. I couldn't wait to get out was the vibe I got from Grealish's interview. Or Grealish may as well have tweeted, my city, my club, my release clause. These aren't actual cutting things that Grealish said. It's what, you know, how he's been framed. This isn't exactly, you know, what Grealish has been saying. It's just how it's framed, just to stoke the fires of the readers, just to get engagement.
And stoke it did.
To get them spitting vitriol. So I missed out on all that bullshit. But you do, once you take a break, you do realise that it is just a load of bollocks. And who gives a fuck? He's not, you know, he's not a Villa player anymore. And, newsflash, he's not going to go around bad-mouthing Villa and shitting on Villa. Because, you know, he is a proper fan. He doesn't just suddenly turn. Grealish said it himself. You know, you don't really understand the football world, the real football world out there. And I think what he's referring to there is, the levels that he needs to be at, and, you know, that his management will push him out. He needs to be playing Champions League and, you know, for endorsements and all this kind of shit. And it is, it's a career path. And we all know the situations, and we were talking about ideology if he stays, and it would be a gamble for him to stay, because you're really trusting in this, the kind of plan. But we don't even know if it really is going to be successful, do we? It's we're taking a jump into the dark. But yeah, no, it's all a bit, it's very petty. Just let him, you know, get on with his life. He's of no concern to us. Right, time for the 3 points. I had a meeting with the West Midlands Police, this football was it the independent advisory group that I'm on? And I think I mentioned this on the podcast, or at least in Match Club, that when I asked the West Midlands Police about what's happening with these vaccine passports, and you know, it's a good few weeks ago, they said, don't think they're going to happen. And here we are. The Health Secretary, Sajid Javid, said that England vaccine passports had been ditched. So clubs, football stadiums, etc. won't be required for them. I was in Holland, as I've said, and it seemed a bit more relaxed there. You know, you only had to wear a mask on public transport. Nobody wore them anywhere else, pretty much. In this case, I mean, you want to go to a football match knowing that there's a good chance that you won't catch COVID, I think, because, you know, you have concerns about your health.
Well, you just want to be as safe as you can be. And know that, you know, every measure's been taken. And I mean, I have no problem being in the ground, but it's like, as long as we're all, you know, we know we're safe to be here, then great, let's go.
I understand the argument behind, you know, people who don't want to get vaccinated and feel that they shouldn't be, you know, having to flip passports for the most basic of things, freedoms, and I completely get that. If it was a guarantee that people weren't stupid and selfish, then I wouldn't have a problem. And I would say, yeah, we don't need these passports. But the problem is, there's a lot of stupid and selfish people out there. So that is my problem. What is the guarantee against them? That is my only real concern in this situation. Hopefully, things won't get worse, and this will be in our rear view mirror soon. Although, cricket's cancelled.
What a fucking shambles that was. And we thought football was just about money. Jesus Christ, did the ECB get bent over a barrel by the IPL?
Ooh, he's off on one. But no, but you know, Villa players missing games, it's still very much a going concern is the old COVID. So let's see what happens. Point number two, well, speaking of COVID again, Argentina and Brazil game that was Villa obviously featured in the ramifications of that being called off after 5 minutes. It wasn't the only game to be postponed during the international break, was it, Mr. Shaw?
No, it wasn't. Morocco had a World Cup qualifier against Guinea called off for a bit of more of a serious reason. There was a coup d'etat in the country just as they were waiting for the match to kick off. Before the postponement was announced, the Morocco coach, Vahid Haladazic, told L'Equipe that they're at the hotel, they could hear gunshots outside, and they were waiting for permission to go to the airport. But the problem was the airport was between 45 minutes to an hour away. So, you know, stick something out of a film where they're going to have to make a dash for the airport or a dash for the border, whichever one's closer, to get out of there. And the coup was actually successful. So at the minute, Guinea's in a state of sort of flux. The military are in charge, and it's all kicking off over there.
Seems to be a good time to have a coup, because it seems to be a good possibility of success at this moment, it seems, if you take the recent news. Point number three, when it gets down to transfer deadline day, there's always, I mean, Villa don't bother on transfer deadline day now, so this has been a case for a while now in terms of big ins, so I never really get involved in it, but people are still suckered refreshing Twitter all the time. They kind of haven't learned the way we do things. But meanwhile, in the rest of the world, some transfers are touch and go and decided on fine margins. And can you imagine if this happened to Villa? The outrage, the meltdown on Twitter that Lazio fans faced. Tell me more about this, Mr. Budd.
Well, Lazio were due to sign a lad called Filip Kostic from Eintracht Frankfurt, only for them to learn that their official transfer had actually gone to the wrong email address, having spelt Frankfurt without a K on the email, you know, thus sending that offer to the wrong person.
So they're just sitting there wondering why nobody's replied to them.
Yeah. Yeah, it's about a schoolboy's entering a country with an international team without knowing if you need to quarantine or not. But then Frankfurt came back saying, you know, they sort of were dismissing suggestions that they gave Lazio a fake email address. How you do that? Surely you can't be that stupid to fall for that.
So the agenda is that Frankfurt basically wanted to keep him, so they gave him the wrong email address.
The word from Italy was that Frankfurt deliberately provided Lazio with the wrong email address. What is it? Transfers@frankfurt.com. It's like, come off it.
at Gmail.
Yeah.
I think this is them just
yahoo.com.
This is them at hotmail.com. This is just them covering up their boo-boo, isn't it?
Transfers4u_Frankfurt. at CompuServe or one of these really crappy old ones.
Right, anyway, that's the 3 points. Before we get started in earnest, I just want to give a shout out to supporters of the show Free Trade, which is, as if you've been listening to the show, and of course a few of you have signed up already, a commission-free trading app that makes it easy for you to buy shares, no commission needed, and helps you buy shares and build your portfolio to hopefully grow your personal wealth in the long term. Remember, as with all investments, your capital is at risk, and the value of your portfolio may go down as well as up, and you may get back less than what you invest. The good news is, though, all listeners, when they sign up and download the app and fund it, get a free share to the value of £3 to £200. So go to the link freetrade.io/moms, M-O-M-S, to download the app and get the details there. Thank you very much.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Right, let's talk about this Chelsea game, shall we?
We shall.
Yes.
This is a game where I wasn't fully invested in this because of that Martinez and Buendia situation. That just left me half empty going into this game. But at the same time, feeling reasonably bullish. I'm not giving away 3 points here. I'm going there thinking, oh, we've got Bailey. Oh, he was on the bench. We've got Ollie Watkins back.
And we took Traore's 4 points off him last year, didn't we?
Indeed. And you're thinking, yeah, you know, we got a chance.
Why not?
We've got to keep them away from Jed Steer and see what happens. I wasn't surprised by the, I don't know how you want to frame it, if you want to go 5-3-2 or 3-5-2 or 3-4-3. But the idea of playing three centre-backs is something that we entertained as soon as we heard that we'd signed Danny Ings, because that's one way that you can play two up top is to play wing-backs. It seemed to be a logical method to the madness of playing two up front. So you just think if Ings and Watkins see enough of the ball here, you know, there's a chance for a bit of purchase here.
And it had legs, didn't it, to be fair, in the first half?
The only thing missing from that system, I think, is just Martinez in goal, really.
Mm-hmm.
And Buendia can come in and, you know, that's an alternate. But I think if you've got Martinez in there, that system, I think, will work reasonably well. I think, as Smith said in his post-match, previously played Chelsea, I think, in the 2-1 win with two deep sitters. So the idea that Tuchel was perhaps expecting more of the same, especially because Villa were away from home. But
yeah, matched them.
So instead he matched them and hoodwinked his opposite number. And we were all over him in the early parts, I thought.
We were. They had that new signing, didn't they? Saul, was it? Saul, I think, how you pronounce it. In the number six position, as Kante was out for them. And we piled on top of him. You know, the midfield three of Luiz, McGinn and Ramsey. They all played really well in that first half. McGinn was like a dog on heat, wasn't he? He was just everywhere. I was impressed with Ramsey and Luiz. I thought their passing was good, their ball carrying was good. They were positive as well. Watkins' work rate, you saw straight away that we'd missed it. And the wing-backs actually got more involved than I thought they would. I had a feeling if we played a back three with wing-backs that they might get pinned, you know, pinned back.
Yeah, so I'm here trying to think of how I re-enter this conversation, making a reference to John McGinn's lipstick, referring to the dog on heat metaphor. But a few stray passes from McGinn. I mean, let's just levitate on
McGinn a little bit. Yeah, we've mentioned this a few times, haven't we?
So much good stuff. He's robbing them blind in their own half, you know, really high up as well, which is very useful to get a turnover and get the ball. But just his final ball, just sometimes just let him down.
It's just that little, it's these small percentages, isn't it, that will get him up another level as a player, because he's got so much going for him and he looks leaner and, you know, he looks a lot fitter, doesn't he, this season? He said himself he is. He's getting around the pitch better. And as you said, he's very, very aggressive in his pressing and sort of harrying and stuff. But then when he gets the ball, you think, go on, just get the pace of your, you know, the pace of your pass right.
Because some of them just went straight off, didn't they? Well, you know, he's,
yeah.
There was a cross that just went.
He normally has won a game.
Yeah. A bit like Mings's mistakes.
But McGinn seems to be on set piece duty now, so he was taking a lot of the free kicks that were won, sort of just, you know, midway inside the opposition
left
half.
Yeah,
I don't know if it's a little bit of composure, because he is, you know, it's kind of quite manic in his approach, which is great, aggressive and manic, and that's what's massive pluses in the positive column, because
you just want that calmness, don't you, on the ball?
Yeah. We needed something like that in terms of having more of a presence in the centre, but he's got it in him. I mean, he's a great passer of the ball, and it was just, it just takes away from being, like, as you said, that next level of midfielder, which if we get it, you know, if he gets to that next level, then...
becomes an absolute bargain, even more so.
Yeah, and helps us big time.
But yeah, that midfield three worked well. I thought we did well. We caused them a lot of problems as well. You know, the plan was working, bar obviously conceding.
Ramsey was having actual impact on the game. I mean, we've not really in a patronising fashion, but when we've mentioned him and we've reasoned and rationalised his inclusion, it's, you know, it's normally to give us a bit of legs and energy in the midfield. But this time, he's actually got a bit of composure and looks very comfortable.
Yeah, and he took the game to them, didn't he? There was a couple of times where he actually carried the ball right at the defence.
Yeah, and he doesn't. He seems to shoot at the right time. Now, he could have put a bit more strength behind it, the shot he did have. It went straight at Mendy, but, you know, he delayed it and waited until there was a gap and hit it. I don't think Chelsea thought he had it in him to shoot, but if he carries on, again, it'll come.
Yeah, the two things I liked about it was when he threads Watkins in on goal, he continued his run, and probably the best option there, that this is when Watkins shot low to Mendes' bottom corner, and the keeper did a good job of saving that. But actually, probably the best bet was to play it back to Ramsey, because he was deep into that 18-yard box, fairly central, and maybe a better bet to score from his position anyway. And he was, you know, he was a bit pissed off that he didn't get that ball back. And then when he just pulled that Chelsea player back and tossed him like a rag doll, like, took one for the team. But it just shows you that he's playing without fear. He's happy to be pissed off at Watkins not giving him a ball back, and also not afraid to give a Chelsea player a tug back.
He's playing like a man. It's just nice to see that, a bit of aggression. Same with Luiz.
Yeah.
Luiz had a little bit of aggression, a bit of snap in his play, and his passing was neat. But then ultimately, you know, we made, what, probably three big chances at least. And we just didn't take them. And Lukaku did, and, you know, ultimately, this is the difference, isn't it?
I mean, Ramsey was pulled off after about 55 minutes, but, you know, 100% pass completion. Luiz came off with about 10 to go, and he was 93.6 pass completion. So, as you say, you know, that backs up what you're saying about them being tidy.
Mm-hmm.
The first goal, that was, I had a look at this, and Konza's out of position. He gets caught out of position, and people are saying Tuanzebe this, Tuanzebe that, but Konza is right up the field. He's in their half, and he gets caught. And so that puts Tuanzebe under a lot of pressure. And, you know, you're not talking about any average centre forward. This is, you know, pace and power. And I think because Tuanzebe knows, you know, it's all on him, I think he overcompensates with his slide in there. You know, he potentially could have stood up.
Yeah,
but Konza should be alongside him.
Yeah, it's really all he could do when he was isolated one-on-one with Lukaku was to sort of hold him up until he got a bit of support, because Lukaku can finish in either foot. So while Tuanzebe shouldn't have dived in as much, if he stood still and stood up straight, Lukaku's just going to pull it across there with the left foot instead of taking it on the right. So, I mean, when he gets the ball in the box, you know, when there's only one defender in front of him, it's, you know, 9 times out of 10 it's going in. That's why he's worth that money.
I mean, Villa have sort of, you know, they've drifted a little bit, but actually the construction of the goal from back to front for Chelsea, I think, is really good as well. You have to give them credit. It's a brilliant pass through. And then when Lukaku gets into the position, I actually think he's really composed, and it's a great finish. You know, sometimes you just have to go, all right, fair enough. It's not ideal from Villa, but it's... And physically, of course, you're not just going to sort of run him out of play. No, smaller. You're going to have to just stand up and take one in the face, probably.
The way Kovacic, he took two of our midfielders out with some slick movement and the great ball through. But, you know, as I said, Konsa was, he was just caught flat-footed there because the speed of movement by the Chelsea player, I don't think he expected a through ball that quick from, you know, from his starting position.
Mm-hmm.
So it is what it is. We got sucker punch. You can't really dwell on it too much. And Villa didn't.
They reacted brilliantly, I thought, to the goal.
Heads didn't go down, and we were all over them. And you know, the best player in that first half was probably Mendy in terms of performance wise, because he kept Chelsea ahead and got a bit of fortune here and there. Certain balls, you know, when Mings had that chance, good save, but instead of dropping to Konsa, who hit it into the ground before Mendy made another good save from that. You know, if that dropped to an Ings or a Watkins, it might have been a different story. So Chelsea rode their luck a bit. I mean, Thiago Silva made a good block. I don't know if Watkins could have done better there.
Yeah, it was a really good block. I mean, you could see a more inexperienced defender, you know, throwing his arms ever. Silva went out, both arms sort of like behind his back, and, you know, chests it away. It's just, it was class defending there. Nothing really could do.
Yeah, Watkins goes around the keeper, doesn't he? And he sort of fluffs his shot. He's kind of stretching for it a little bit. He almost would have been probably better taking it first time.
Yeah.
As the goalie, you know, unrushed him. And then obviously there's the Konsa chance, which, you know, as well as the Mings one, and then followed shortly after by the Konsa one. They're good chances.
Yeah, and you got an insight in that first half why Chelsea don't concede many goals. I mean, they had so many clean sheets on the way to winning the Champions League, for starters. And when you've got a defence like that and a keeper like that, you've got a legit chance in the Premier League title race.
Mm-hmm. I think they have this year. I think they're going to be, it's going to probably be between them and City.
Well, you know, there's still, you know, Liverpool, I think, are still game, and we'll see how the United Roadshow rolls on, if it can sustain its glitz. Mm.
Yeah, but of course, you know, essentially, you know, getting back to the Villa, you go in 1-0 down, but you think we're banging the game here. Now, you don't necessarily think we're going to sustain the levels we have in the first half, because you do think with Chelsea's bench, they're going to be able to change it here. It's not quite working. They hooked Saul at half-time, didn't they, for Jorginho, who kind of shored them up and made them more solid. But then, of course, the Mings brain fart, and you're sort of 2-0 down.
Yeah, I was just about to say, you're thinking, yeah, we're only 1-0 down and we're doing well, but when is the Mings mistake coming? And it probably came, you know, by his own admission, it came at probably the worst time it could have happened.
You're sort of thinking, just get through those first sort of 5-10 minutes, grow back into the game in the second half, and then have a go, and you've killed the game really with a second goal. It's, you know, Smith has said as much. You know, you ain't going to Stamford Bridge and coming back from 2-0 down.
Two thoughts here. One, the first one would be Villa. You do make mistakes when you play out the back, but that's when you're just adopting that kind of, let's say, ethos. But I think this Villa backline is established now, and you can't really pull that excuse for them, as in they're learning on the job. My second observation, and, you know, address both of these at the same time, is Martinez plays a little higher up than Steer. I thought Steer was quite deep, so there's an argument that Martinez might have got to that.
It's just that little bit of sharpness that it gives you as well, of just gambling. Yeah. I'm just going to have to throw myself at the ball here and maybe take one for the team.
Because Martinez does play a bit, you know, further forward, and he's very quick off his line in terms of his positioning.
Rapid,
he has got a good sense. So there's an argument that, I saw a goalkeeper there that was a number two throughout the whole game there. There was just something casual about, you know, his dive on the third one. You know, I'm not saying, you know, he had any
right. I wouldn't say necessarily casual, David. I think it's definitely that he's just not at the tempo and the level we're at the moment.
On the third goal, his starting position could have been a bit closer to the shot. But I'm not in any way blaming him for any of those three goals. But I'm thinking that Martinez might have had a chance in all three of those situations.
Yeah, and you have to wonder as well, would he be shouting, you know, would he be keeping the defence more honest? Would he be more vocal than Steer was? Because I didn't see Steer, you know, shouting as much as Martinez does. Would he have said that, you know, would he have said the things like make sure or man on, you know, just simple commands? I mean, Steer looked to take sort of Steer by shock. The pass was coming back to him. It was underhit, but he didn't look ready for it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we're not absolving Mings' responsibility there. We're just saying, you know, there's other sides to the coin here.
It's just poor, to be honest, isn't it? Let's be honest. It's just a really bad passage of play. You've just gifted the European champions a goal.
Yeah,
And you pretty much smothered them since they had scored. So you just let them off the hook, essentially.
And then from that point, you know, it's very easy for them to play at their own tempo. And we couldn't really grow into the game as much then, even though we still had more set pieces and huffed and puffed a bit. But we were just never, Chelsea were very comfortable there.
Yeah, they just shut up shop. They just went into cruise control. That was it over. As a game, especially with Jorginho then being on the pitch, that's his kind of game.
And you know that if Villa open up at any point, they're going to get picked off.
I mean, on the third goal, target's too far up the pitch and Mings has to come across essentially to fill his role at left back. He gets skinned and then, you know, the defence is just all out of shape there. I wouldn't on this one put it on Mings's mantelpiece, mistake. Because
it's a team goal, that one, isn't it?
Yeah, he's coming across because target's not in his position and then nobody's really covering Mings coming out to the left, so that's a whole defensive line that's fucked up.
I dare say if Mings hadn't been already on a yellow card, Aspilicueta wouldn't have got round him as much. So he definitely just went out to him there. But I think, you know, going at that pace out to him, if Mings hadn't been on a yellow, I think Aspilicueta ball and all would have ended up maybe in the stands.
Yeah. But I mean, you know, again, Chelsea, they get into for all Villa's huffing and puffing in the first half, chances squandered, of which there were what, three or four. You put the ball in front of goal for Lukaku and he's clinical. And that's sort of the ending message really from Smith, is that the difference was Chelsea had chances and took them, Villa had chances and didn't. And that's the difference between a mid-table Villa side and a team that's just won the Champions League, is that you give them the openings and they'll punish you. You know, they've beaten Villa 3-0 and not really had to play particularly well.
Interestingly, Watkins, 6 shots, 2 on target. Now, Ings, did he even play that game?
He didn't get a sniff, did he?
Didn't get a sniff. 14 touches in the whole game. 1 shot. I mean, the amazing thing is the amount of ball we had and a lot of, you know, the possession we had actually in their half. And, you know, we're talking the final third here. And Ings was hardly ever pivotal in that. And there was hardly any link up between him and Watkins. There was a little at the end of that Brentford game and you thought, oh, yeah, this looks promising. But nothing really here. And, you know, you're talking about clinicalness and that being the difference. You know, I think if Ings had had 6 shots, 2 on target, I think I'd be putting money on at least a goal there.
I think the one when he's put through, there was one where there was a ball for Watkins, wasn't there? And they fluffed that one. It's all these little margins, which they will come. And I'm confident they will, that I think we've seen enough for the best part of 50 minutes, I think this side can be a good side, but it's these fine margins, and I think Smith will have a good week on the training ground with them now to really, you know, fine tune it. And I don't think we'll see 3 at the back against Everton. I think they'll revert back to what they were. I think it'll be a very positive lineup actually, because I think they might try and bring Bailey in that game.
Yeah, I think that formation is one for the big boys.
Good to know we can do that if we need to stifle teams though.
Yeah, you know, you say weak. I think it's going to take a few games to really get up and running here, because Bailey doesn't really know, what his role is, because he's come on as a sub.
Mm-hmm.
And the formation was, 3 at the back. It was a completely different setup to how he would ideally play in terms of out wide. So, he did his best work in the right back spot, didn't he?
Yeah. He's got some bloody pace on him, though, hasn't he? He saw little glimpses. We've seen it in the appearances he's had. He has got a burst of pace. Like, you expect him to have like straight line speed over a long period, but he's quick over short distances as well.
Yeah, I think I said on Match Club, it's as if he's playing at times 1.5 the speed of everybody else.
I will say, though, whenever Ings went off, you didn't really see Watkins again. So did the Chelsea defence know as well that if Ings gets one of these chances, it's in? If Watkins gets one, maybe, you know, you have a bit more time to get across to him. It's just one of those things.
Yeah, I think at the time it's probably easier to nullify Ings than it is Watkins. Because Watkins just gives you work, right? Yeah, and Watkins gives the it doesn't matter who you're playing, he gives any team problems, I think, just because of his movement and his work rate.
Yeah, and I think because he pulls you all over the place, he can bring other people in. I think Danny Ings is very much the fox in the box player, and that's what we've bought him for. But it'll be interesting to see against Everton if he wants to play Watkins and Ings, if he goes to a front three and then maybe incorporates either El Ghazi on the left with Watkins on the right, or if he goes with Bailey or Traore. It will be, I think we said it in Smith for the weekend, that the Everton game will be the first real barometer of where we're at with this team in terms of personnel and playing style and system, because we don't quite know what we're going to get yet from that front combination from sort of the midfield and the front three.
But I think after a few games, once Ings starts to kind of learn Watkins' in-game movement, then I think that will improve us greatly. If there's more of an understanding there and Ings knows, you know, where to be when Watkins makes his moves.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you'll see him in the right place more than he was against Chelsea when he was a little bit AWOL at times.
Yeah, I think with the upcoming run of fixtures we've got, of which there's some difficult games coming up, I think we're just going to have to kind of hold our nerve a little bit here and know that it's probably going to be a challenging period. But you know, you're just going to have to buy into potential that we're actually going to be better in the second half of the season.
You know, at the same time, we can actually go into games reasonably gung-ho, that we're at a certain level, that while we're not fine-tuned, we're still we're not a team that's easy to play against, and other teams will have to do well. I mean, Chelsea's case, it was more like holding their nerve and finishing well, taking their chances. You know, we didn't allow them to play us off the park, put it that way.
No, yeah. Tuchel was very complimentary in his after-match comments about Villa, said it was a very strong team.
And I think with us at the moment, both from our side and the opposition, I don't think teams quite know what to expect now. Whereas last season, you know, we all accused Villa of being quite predictable, especially when we built the attack around Grealish. Now it's sort of, you don't quite know where the focal point is yet.
We don't know. As supporters, we really haven't got a clue. And as you said, Everton's a good first clue, because that's when we've got pretty much most of our personnel ready and fit for a change.
Yeah,
I've just remember we lost this game. We lots of positives here, and I'm happy with that. You know, you get beat away against Chelsea, and you haven't got your strongest team. I'm not that fussed about that. What I saw with my own eyes in terms of the long term, I was pretty happy. But still, you're gonna have to line those 11 players up and choose one of them to. I think. To carry on, if anybody listened to a Villa Minute in something for the weekend, line up those 11 players and choose one of them to do 10 days quarantine in a dark, damp hotel in Stoke. Which player are you going for?
It has to be Mings, doesn't it? It has to be.
Yeah, it's the individual error.
Yeah, he's booked himself into that hotel with his tweet after the match.
Yeah, it's kind of an easy one, this, isn't it? He's already there.
I apologise to my teammates and the fans for a crap pass. I actually think we played very well yesterday too, which makes it even more painful.
He's owned it, to be fair.
Yeah, and I like the fact that they're pissed off about it. It's like, and it's against Chelsea and they're still pissed off. That's a good attitude to have. I mean,
shows there's some expectation for, like, you know, standards and stuff, and that's what you need. You won't progress if there aren't standards and a bit of accountability.
Yeah, and let's finish on the stat of the game.
If you have a scoring duck that needs broken, you just call on Villa, don't you? Because Lukaku had never scored at Stamford Bridge in 15 appearances and 22 shots for, you know, Everton, Chelsea, first time round, United, he'd never scored at Stamford Bridge until we rock up.
And that is the stat that we were going to mention on something for the weekend, and then we pulled out. We said, if we say it, it's going to happen, but it seems that if we think it, it still happens. So can't really win on that one when it comes to Villa. But there was an air of inevitability about that, for sure. Right, just want to say a big thank you, as always, to the Mile Man Said patrons for supporting the show, and everybody who signed up in the last month or so. The extra Mile Man Said podcast channel has kicked off for the season with Mile Man Saw. This is said, and that is saw. So, which is a departure in the spirit of the international break. It was a departure from Villa, My Old Man Saw is one of the extra podcasts on the channel, which discusses screen culture and other things. The Mad Few will be out next week. And also my solo ditty off the record will be rolling out next week as well. But also, when you sign up as a patron, as well as getting access to the extra podcast channel, you also get access to the mothership, which is Match Club. Many cavernous alcoves in Match Club, from Screen Club, which is connected to My Old Man Saw, to Investo Club as well, where everybody gets rich. Isn't that what happens there, Phil?
That's the plan.
That's the end game.
Yeah.
We have just started, but it's a good hive mind that's building up, and we will start to enrich that setup there as well, as there's plans afoot. But please do go to My Old Man Said. If you're a fan of the show, go to myoldmansaid.com and click on the Patreon link and join us for we are going on to the next level of Match Club and the Patreon setup. Right, please do follow us on Twitter at My Old Man Said and subscribe on all whatever good podcast app that you choose to listen to the show on. Thanks, as always, for listening as well. Any final words from you chaps?
Not from me. I'm quite looking forward to Everton, though. It should be a good atmosphere as well. You know, being a 5:30 kickoff, you'd imagine that'll be a bit of a lively one.
Few drinks. Oh, yes. Exactly. Yeah, no, I think it has a feeling that it's like the start of the season.
Because
we've been going into games with one arm tied behind our back, which lowers expectations. But now, and by the way, good opposition in Everton. They've had a decent start. And Rafa always makes them hard to beat.
Yeah.
Right. Until we beat them, though. It's goodbye from me and it's goodbye from them.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.